maybe a friend would make you a cassette tape, but or in the 90s, a friend with an expensive CD player could burn you a CD copy. But the original CD burners were $4,000 or $5,000 each when they first came out. So cassette tapes are, you know, were the way people shared music, and so that was not particularly damaging to the bottom line of the artist. So the debate we have now, and I know, you know, there's a number of ways to look at it. There's a whole generation that's come up. I mean, there are probably a lot of people out there that have never bought a CD. Heck, I haven't bought a CD in years myself. I download music legally. But the problem is music has become, since Napster happened, not only music was the first, but anything that could be digitized has, there's a whole cultural shift. And there's this now thought that, well, if I can get it digitally, it should be free. And that horse is out of the barn. We're not going to go back, and I'm not going to get on some rant about, you know, no, it should not be free. I mean, that's just, whether I like it or not, that's the way things are. So you have to learn to adapt to that. So the question becomes, if I spend, you know, $5,000 in musicians and recording studios and mastering engineers and everything else to release a song, I put it up on iTunes, and then somebody buys it on iTunes and then sends that MP3 to 10 of their friends, I can't stop that. And, you know, I guess you have to be thankful that they like it enough to share it. But the question remains, how am I going to pay back, you know, those musicians and engineers I had to hire to do my song, to record my song? And so that's the conundrum. So I've heard people say, very learned people, well, you got to go and perform live. Well, that's great if you're Bruce Springsteen, and you can go and sell out, you know, an arena somewhere. But most struggling artists, particularly jazz music, well, any kind of musicians, I mean, you know, they're lucky to, you know, I know a lot of brilliant jazz musicians in the area I work in that'll play for $50 a night. And, you know, even if you do that 7 days a week, which you can't, because the clubs aren't there, you're not going to make a living on $350 a week and raise a family and do all the other things. You know, you spend, like anything, you spend a lot of years of your life performing your or perfecting your craft and getting to the point that people will want to pay to listen to you or want to come and see you play. But so this is a conundrum. I heard a very knowledgeable political commentator once recently, who I shall not name, said, you know, was very sort of condescending about how dare musicians think their music should not be free. They should just go play live. Well, that's great if you can, you know, get the gigs. But unfortunately, there are a lot more musicians than there are venues to perform. So then what do you do? You have to sell something if you're going to keep, you know, I mean, heck, I have my own studio, and so I don't have studio costs, but I spend, you know, learned engineering over the years. And so, you know, say I want to go buy a new microphone that costs $2,000. If I have people downloading my music for free, the conundrum is, how do I make enough money to be able to spend 8 or 10 hours, 12 hours a day in my studio and upgrade, you know, technology and all the things that's required and staying current? Yet the cultural idea is that my music should be freely exchanged. It's digital, so it should be free. Obviously, magazines are dealing with this, newspapers, and I'm guilty of it too. I have been reading newspapers all my life. I don't subscribe to newspapers anymore. I used to get the New York Times and Atlanta Journal and others, Wall Street Journal, at my door every week and every morning. Now I sit, you know, get up in the morning and open up my iPad and go on the Huffington Post or Salon or Google News or whatever. So it's I don't have any answers to it, but that's the problem. And all I can encourage is for the listener to at least be understanding of the plight of the content creator. I don't have any answers other than to say what I'm trying. You know, I do a lot more engineering than I used to for other artists and other people making their own projects, and to fill that gap. You know, so that's how I make my money. I run a studio and do my own music on the side. It's a tough question, and I wish I were smart enough to have the answer to it. But I don't. But I just, again, I would encourage everyone to at least be cognizant Now, if an artist says, here's my music, take it for free, then they're making a choice for that to be exposure. And then you go to their website. And hopefully, the other question is, you know, you try to create some sort of cachet as an artist, some sort of lifestyle that someone might want to participate in. For example, well, not lifestyle, but, you know, some sort of cachet, t-shirts is a common thing, you know. And in fact, I have a couple of cool t-shirt designs I'll be putting on my website. By the way, my own website is woefully behind or overdue in an upgrade. So please don't judge me by the fact that my website hasn't been touched in 2 years. But I do have a new one under construction. But hopefully you'll buy the t-shirts. I've got some cool ideas. But that's the challenge. I don't have the answer to it, but that's the challenge. How do we make enough money to do what it is we do, to create the music, to have the time to create the music, to have the tools to create the music, yet knowing full well that once you do create the music, it's likely to be taken with no compensation.
What do you think about, you know, crowdsourcing, the Kickstarters, Indiegogos as a way of maybe potentially financing these things, a new revenue stream to make these kinds of endeavors possible?
Well, I think that's cool. A lot of people have done that. I don't know how those things are going now. And I know a number of artists have burned their contributors, you know, collect the money. I'm personally aware of a few that have, you know, collected a certain amount of money to make a project, then they spent the money and there's no project. So, you know, not that I would ever in a million years do that, but I think that's probably burned that. I've never done a crowdsourcing campaign. I guess I'm old school enough that I'm feel a little too proud to ask for others to fund my project, but it might make sense. I don't know. That's a bridge I haven't crossed yet, and it's due to my own, you know, my own sense of pride, I guess, but there's nothing wrong with it. And what that would do in most cases is it would fund the production. Yeah. And the way records, I mean, the reason that there are artists that are successful, I mean, let's say I were to do a crowdsourcing campaign and say get $10,000 to do a recording. You spend that on the artists and probably little to none on your own. You might pay a light bill with it or something, but then what happens? You release the record and, you know, it's difficult to you would find yourself, I don't know, that I kind of thinking about this as we go. I've never really thought about it that much, but I would imagine you might get into this sort of cycle of, okay, I did a crowdsource and I, you know, released my project and now I need to do another one to do the next project. And, you know, ideally I'd rather not have to ask for the fans to fund it. But that's certainly a legitimate thing to do. And who knows, maybe it's something I might undertake at some point.
All right. Very well. Well, sir, I think that's all I have. Is there anything else you'd like to tell my audience?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, thank you all. If you're Weather Channel music fans, thank you so much. I get really wonderful letters and comments all the time, and I'm very, very honored to have that. And thank you for looking me up. I will be finishing a new project soon. I think you'll like it. One thing I've intended to do with my new project is to kind of show some of my other musical influences. So it's not just, you know, to incorporate a lot of what the Weather Channel was apparently attractive to fans about the Weather Channel music, but also expand on that. So I've incorporating some vocals, incorporating longer form formats, song formats, and just trying to share more of my musical influences, you know, within that, you know, beyond just the Weather Channel sound. So it incorporates that sound but expands on it. So I've got some great musicians. I've got some well-known musicians that have agreed to participate in some of the songs coming up. I did release a single a while back. It's actually a remake of an old Seals and Crofts song called Summer Breeze, and it's available on iTunes. I hope you'll check it out. It's a cover song. It has vocals, so that's something that's very different, but compared to the Weather Channel music. But I hope you'll check that music out. And please check back, look me up on Facebook on and TrammelStarks.com, and look forward to hearing from everyone.
All right, very well. Well, Mr. Starks, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today. And best of luck in all your future ventures, sir.
Thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
No problem. This is Special K of the Black Flag Cast.